Hey everyone, welcome to the Southside Church podcast from Chilliwack, British Columbia, Canada. We're praying that hope would rise in your life as you listen to this message today.
We had a high school teacher once who was talking about the most dangerous jobs, you know? He said like underwater welder was dangerous. Air traffic controller, he said, because it's so stressful. I got a new one, preaching at the 8 a.m. service on Spring Forward. Spring forward, baby. I did a quick question to them, asked them how many people have been up since 4 a.m. or earlier, and every single hand went up. I'm like, you guys are hardcore and very serious. They're very serious. So you know what? Can we just make some noise? Celebrate, please, that it's spring forward. I just want to know you're alive. You're alive. You're good, 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 good. Hey, I want to say thank you. Last week, my wife Corinne and I brought someone to church, and you probably know this already, but when you bring someone to church, it changes the way you look at church. It changes the way you look at the parking team, the hospitality team, the guest services team, the Southside Kids team, the tech team, the music team. It changes the way probably you view the preaching, actually. And I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you. Like, it's easy for me to stand up here and say, man, every week people walk through those doors and lost people become found, and people walk from chaos to peace, from darkness to light, from death to life. And that's very true, but it kind of hits different when you bring someone to church. I remember last week the band introduced a new song, and it's called Good to Me. And before they sang it, Jeff just read a very familiar passage out of the Bible, Psalm 23. And that's a passage that I probably heard read, I don't know, like dozens and dozens of times, but it hit different last week for me. Because I was praying it for our friend, believing it for our friend. And actually, I felt it more significantly for myself. And I know God gets the glory, but I also know God works through people like you. So thank you. Thank you for serving. Thank you for giving. Thank you for praying for this church to create a church that I can actually be proud to invite my friends and my family to. I would say this also. I would invite you to do the same. Dave already mentioned it. Bring someone to church. You know, can be next week, could be for Easter. Easter is a time of year that people who don't normally accept an invitation to church, they might. Here's what I know will happen if you bring someone to church. They'll be blessed. It'll make a difference, you know? But I was reminded again last week that it won't just make a difference for them. It'll make a difference for you. So I want to tell you a story today about a miracle that took place in my life, and it's still playing out in this very moment. See, we jumped into 2024 with the goal of preaching through the Old Testament book of Proverbs. And we said that Proverbs is a book of wisdom. Okay, so wisdom, we've been defining it, and I'll define it again. It's to discover and live in light of this pattern that we call reality. Because you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Does that make sense? And what I would suggest to you is that wisdom speaks into every area of human existence, which is really important to note because, well, I think in large part, wisdom will determine for you this year whether you just settle for existence or whether you live, like really live. Wisdom will determine whether for you this year, the best that you can say is, well, my heart's beating and my lungs are breathing, or whether it's so much more than that. And as we preach through Proverbs, we're going to see that God speaks in Proverbs about envy and anger, about family and friendships, about money and generosity, about the power of your words and the promise of forgiveness. And Proverbs also talks about sex. And so we've been talking, today is the second week of 3 weeks where we're going to be talking about this whole area of sexuality. And if you ask me to kind of summarize God's words of wisdom when it comes to sexuality, I would probably take a page from these old school marriage ceremonies, paraphrasing Jesus in Matthew chapter 19 when he said, "What God has bound together should not be broken." And so last week I started out, and I'm going to repeat it again today because it's so important. I started out by talking about you, because that's where it starts. That you are a bound together child of God. That you're incredibly intricate. You're infinitely valuable. And what God has bound together in you is this spectacular creation that should not be broken. See, I think if we don't get that foundation, the whole conversation around sexuality becomes semantics, becomes arguing. But if we get it, I think it could actually change the world. If we really knew that you and me, we are bound together children of God, incredibly intricate, infinitely valued. And because of that, and because of Jesus, I'm already loved. I'm already valuable. I'm already beautiful, and so are you. Imagine that we don't have to live our lives trying to be loved, be valuable, become beautiful. Already are. You already are. It changes everything, actually. You're a bound together child of God. Incredibly intricate, infinitely valuable, and what God has bound together should not be broken. And yet, because of Jesus, even that which has been broken can be bound together again. One of the first things that Jesus ever said was, "I stepped into human history to bind up the brokenhearted." What a promise. Changes everything. So that's the foundation. Now let me get into my miracle. I got to go back just a little ways to kind of establish some perspective, okay? So just over a decade ago, I graduated from high school in Red Deer. Don't you dare smile at me. What are you smiling about? Red Deer, Alberta. I was 17 years old, and along with a bunch of my buddies, we decided to continue our education, our post-secondary education, right there in our hometown, Red Deer College. I had two majors, history and political science. I walked into my second year at Red Deer College, and just near the beginning of the second semester, there was a federal election in Canada. And one of our poli-sci profs said in the first day of class, "You're going to have this assignment. It's going to be worth over half of your total mark. You're going to write this massive paper, and the centerpiece of the whole paper is going to be you're going to interview one of the people running for member of parliament in Red Deer." And I was so excited. Right away, I knew who I was going to interview. I knew it. You say, "How did you know it, Mike? Did you really like that guy's political party?" No, his name was Jim Swan, and I really didn't like his political party. Like, I didn't like it at all. So immediately, I wanted to interview this guy. I was 18 years old, so I knew absolutely everything that there was to know about politics, obviously. I made an appointment, a one-hour appointment to interview him. And I was so excited for him, you know, because I was just going to teach him some lessons. I was going to convince him to drop out of the race, actually. And I was going to explain something. I was going to say, "Look, Jim Swan. Yo, Jim, here's the thing. If people vote for you, they're not going to vote for this party. And if too many people don't vote for this party, Jim, you know what's going to happen? This party's going to win." And when I was 18 years old in Red Deer, we did not want, I'm not telling you what this party was either, we did not want that party to win. So I get there, and I realize within about 2 minutes that I'm not going to convince him to drop out of the race. Jim Swan's not going to drop out of the race. I realize the second thing, he's one of the coolest people I ever met. And so we talk a little bit about politics, but we also talked about philosophy and education and careers. We talked about literature and we talked about life. And the one-hour interview ended up lasting 4 hours. And I remember when I drove away that night, I remember it actually really clearly. It was a good news, bad news thing for me. The good news is, I thought, that was really cool. a cool guy. It was cool to meet him. The bad news was I had already assumed everything that was going to happen at the interview, and I had already written my paper. Anyway, I had to write the whole thing over again, which was bad news. Something incredible happened that night, though. Jim Swan went home that night. That's not the incredible part. And he had dinner with his wife and his three daughters. And he looked at his three daughters, and he said to his three daughters, he had never said anything like this to his three daughters before. He said, "Today, I met the young man one of you is going to marry." And Corinne and her two sisters looked at their dad, and they rolled their eyes because, I mean, dads, am I right? You're like, "Mike, did you know that Jim Swan was Corinne?" I didn't know Corinne. You say, "Is that the miracle, Mike?" No, not at all. That's not the miracle. It was kind of cool, though. You know, kind of romantic. But if I said that was the miracle, then I would be believing in something called romanticism, which I just want to spend a couple minutes on. Romanticism is a philosophy that's kind of been established by our culture. Like, no one in their right mind would ever say they believe in it, but yet a lot of our media, a lot of our movies suggest that it's true. It's romanticism. It says basically this, that there's somebody out there, there is a right one out there for you somewhere, a right one. And that right one, they're going to complete you. They're going to meet your deepest needs. That's what romanticism says. They're going to make you feel loved and valuable and beautiful. And so without realizing it, for a lot of us, we go on a search for the right one, you know? Now the reason that no one would really say it out loud is because it's so completely illogical. Because what it would mean that, like, if my right one picks the wrong one, then my whole life is ruined. Like, historically speaking, imagine it this way. If you think mathematically, like, if one person picked the wrong one, the whole romantic equilibrium of human history would be thrown off. So we know that, but yet, we're kind of taught that. Do you know what I mean? And it has some pretty serious ramifications. It plays out differently for different people. Like, for some people, you see them, they just jump from relationship to relationship to relationship to relationship because, after all, they're looking for the right one. This person should finally fully satisfy me. After all, they should meet my deepest needs. I don't feel completely loved, completely valuable, and completely beautiful, so there must be someone else out there. For others, they're scared of being in a relationship at all. Because the second they get to know this person, they look and go, "No, I don't think you can do all that for me." The worst one, though, is what I would refer to as low-grade, long-term disappointment. These are married people, you know? And I mean, come on, like, when we first met, I thought you were cool. I thought you were just gonna meet my deepest needs, and now every time I look at you, I'm like, why do you breathe so funny, man? It just drives me. Why do you clank your spoon on your Fruity Pebbles bowl every morning? It drives me nuts. That's what happens. You say, "Okay, Mike, well, if it's not a miracle, how in the world does Jim Swan say to Corinne and his and her two sisters, I met the guy that one of you is going to marry?" Coincidence, I guess. Or maybe this. Jesus is not bound by time. So maybe Jesus whispered that in Jim Swan's ear, so I would have a story to tell you today. About a year, almost exactly a year after I interviewed Jim Swan, Jesus saved me. It was in the middle of the night, in the middle of January, in the middle of Red Deer. I was walking up the South Hill and I reached the end of myself and I called out to Jesus and I put my faith in him and he saved me. And it's amazing what happens. I think it's kind of important that we establish this because the book of Proverbs talks about this a lot. Like Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says it this way: "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path." Okay, now, so then what happened in the middle of the night, in the middle of January, in the middle of Red Deer, Alberta? I was saved. I put my faith in Jesus. I went from spiritually dead to spiritually alive. My eternity was secure. And now, listen, and now, according to Proverbs, you know what the rest of my life is? The rest of my life is transitioning from merely faith to trust. Because trust is an action word, right? Faith in Jesus saves me, but trust in Jesus actually begins to change me. Trust in Jesus says, you show me the next step to take and I'll take it. That's big. You know, that's one of the reasons why at Southside, we make a big deal out of baptism, you know? Because baptism for many is the first opportunity you have to transition your faith in Jesus, which has saved you, into a trust in Jesus, which will change you. It's hard to trust Jesus, though. You know, like a vast majority of church attenders in North America, for example, do not trust Jesus financially. They just don't. Now, Jesus says, the Bible teaches that what we're supposed to do is this. Listen, this is kind of crazy. Think about it. The Bible says that you're supposed to trust Jesus so much that you bring back the first tenth of what he blessed you with to his house, to the church. And then he says this, and if you do, I'll bless you more with the remaining 90 than you could have blessed yourself with 100. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't. Math, I'm from Red Deer. I'm no math whiz, but I can understand that 100 is more than 90. The only possible reason anyone would do that is what? Trust, that's all. The only reason you would do that is because you trust in a Jesus who actually makes the impossible possible. So I'm in the middle of the night, middle of January, middle of Red Deer, Alberta, and I put my faith in Jesus, I'm saved. And immediately, this is gonna happen for all of us, by the way, immediately he starts giving me next steps. And one of the first steps he gave me was he let me know that I was supposed to leave Red Deer. Nothing wrong with Red Deer, by the way. There was just some patterns and people and places in Red Deer that I needed a break from, okay? But he said, you're gonna leave Red Deer and you're gonna attend this school, this university called Trinity Western University out in Langley. And so I was just new to this whole faith thing, but I figured, man, doing it my way didn't work. So I trusted him enough and I decided I'm gonna leave Red Deer, I'm gonna head to Trinity. And I remember, by the way, on my way out the door to drive to Trinity Western University, I stopped and I said to my little sister, Delaine, I said, Delaine, there's something that you need to know before I leave and go to Trinity Western University. You're thinking I had something really deep and theological. Listen to this, 19-year-old Mike Maness, you wanna know who he was? Here he was. I said, hey, I just wanna make sure you know this. I'm calling it before it happens so you can make sure you look back at this moment. I said, I'm gonna go to this school, Trinity Western University. I'm gonna find the most beautiful girl there. I'm gonna date her. See you later. But remember I said that. Is it possible for a 19-year-old kid to be completely insecure and completely arrogant at the same time? I think it is. I think it is possible. I know somebody. Okay, so anyways, wouldn't you know it? Second day there, I meet this girl, Corinne. And for me, not just the most beautiful girl in the school, most beautiful girl I'd ever seen in my life. And it's funny because we were on a dorm date, my roommate and me with her roommate and her, and we're driving along and I say to her and her roommate, where are you guys from? And her roommate says, my name's Carmen, I'm from Yakima, Washington, which I thought was a really funny name, Yakima, you know, now I live in Chilliwack. So anyways, okay, so it's, I shouldn't make fun of Yakima probably. Okay, so then I look at Corinne and I say, hey, where are you from? And she says, I'm from Red Deer, Alberta. And I'm like, me too. She's like, no, you're not, don't be a jerk. I'm like, no, I am. And I proved it to her and we began to talk, right? And all of a sudden, we're talking, and there was a moment the summer before, I can't get into it now, but we made eye contact once. We remembered that I pretended I didn't remember it, but she did remember it, but I actually did remember it. Okay, so anyways, that's not the story. You guys are so much nicer than the 8 a.m. No, they're great. They're in bed now, it's past their bedtime, but okay, so. Oh yeah, so eventually it's like, wait a minute, did you interview my dad? And I'm like, is your dad Jim Small? And it's like, whoa. And you're like, is that the miracle, Mike? Oh no, that for sure that wasn't the miracle. I wasn't ready, you know? Like if you would have gone back in time to me and my buddies growing up in Red Deer, Alberta, and said, hey, Mike, I'm gonna put you guys on Family Feud. And here's the question. Top 10 things you're looking for in a woman. We would have thought you were kidding. It would have been like, what? No, I only need one, Alex. Just beautiful, that's all. Well, that's really deep. It's really deep, 19-year-old Mike Maness. I know, isn't it? Like if you would have said, come on, Mike. Come on, 18-year-old Mike. Come on, come on, be a little bit deeper than that. Give me five. I would have been like, oh, okay, like beautiful, gorgeous, hot. Like that would, right? It's funny though, you know, because years later, after Corinne and I were married, we moved to Chilliwack. And I remember hanging around with these three single guys. They were my age, but they were single. I was married. And one of them says to me at one point, he's like, hey man, we've been talking, the three of us have been talking, and we decided what we're looking for in a woman. I mean, and I still got a little bit of Red Deer Mike in me, so I was really shocked at what they said. I said, what is it? What are you looking for in a woman? And he said, she's gotta be a great cook. And I burst out laughing because it was so foreign to my concept, you know? And I'm like, and he's like, why are you laughing? It's not funny, we're not kidding. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, okay. So why do you want a woman who's a good cook? And they're like, because I like to eat good food. And I was like, I'm not sure if you're gonna like this question, but I'm gonna ask it anyways. Like, do you think maybe you should learn to cook? And they didn't like that. Okay, but here's the point I'm making. The point I'm making is this. What I'd like to tell you is when I saw Corinne at Trinity Western University that I thought to myself, look at her. A bound together child of God. Incredibly intricate, infinitely valuable. I just can't wait to get to know her better. Just find out her hopes and her dreams and her aspirations and all of that good stuff. But I didn't. I was saved, but I was still really broken. I told you last week, what God has bound together should not be broken. You should never, whether it's she's a good cook or you should never take a man or a woman and think that you can separate one aspect of who they are from the rest. Like I was saved, but I was still really broken because I didn't think any deep thoughts. When I first met Corinne, I just thought to myself, oh, wow, she's beautiful. And I have no idea what she was thinking, but I think she would tell you she was broken back then too. And I have no idea why she decided to give me a shot. I had a great mullet though, actually, now that I think about it. I might bring a picture next week. 19-year-old Mike Mann, I had an incredible mullet. That might've been it. But the miracle started to play out on our first date. I don't count that dorm date thing, the first date. She asked me out, but I mean, who's keeping score? Okay, but she did. She asked me out, okay? So our first date, we go, the plan was to go to church. We're gonna go to church in Langley, and we went to church, and it was really boring, and so we left after about 5 minutes. Don't anybody leave right now. That would be so incredibly mean. We ended up in White Rock. We sat on the pier, and I'm a kid from Red Deer, right? So I'm like the ocean. It was amazing. I'm just like, whoa, look how big the ocean is. And we sat there, and we talked, and a miracle happened. Because there was one thing that both Corinne and I had going for us. Saved, but broken. You know what I mean? But we really loved Jesus. And our faith was transitioning into something called trust. And as we trusted Jesus, we were following him. I mean, that's why I was in Langley in the first place. And when you do that, what happens is that spiritual aliveness plays out in your life. And part of that is deep down inside, you realize that because of Jesus, I'm already loved. I'm already valuable. I'm already beautiful. Because something really courageous happened that night. Honestly, more courageous than I think I had ever been in my entire life. Knowing that I was already loved, that I was already valuable, that I was already beautiful, I did, I think, maybe the most courageous thing I had done up to that point in my life. I said this. Here is me. Here is the good parts of my story. And here's the bad parts. Here's my victories. And here's my defeats. Here's my hopes and my dreams. Here's my shame and my regret. Here's my aspirations and here's my trepidations. Here is me. And Corinne did the exact same thing. It was incredibly profound. I said something to you last week. We talked about the gift of free will. That God gave us this gift right from the very beginning of free will. And the reason that he gave us free will is that we could have a relationship with God, but also have a profound relationship with others. And that's what it looks like. Real me and real you. That's what a real friendship looks like, by the way. Something was beginning to change inside of me. There was a miracle that started on the pier at White Rock overlooking the Pacific Ocean. I would also mention this. If you're married here today, that's what marriage is. It wasn't just your first date or your second date or your 20th date. It's today. You know what marriage is today? Here is me. Here is me. Here's the good parts of my story, and here's the not so good parts of my story. How courageous would that be? What a beautiful thing to do. That's what marriage is. Here's my hopes, and here's my dreams. Here is me. Here's my victories, and here's my defeats. That's what marriage is, by the way. It doesn't matter to me how long you've been married. If you're a guy, you look at me and say, oh, I've been married for 10 years right now. I don't really need to ask my wife who she is. I completely and totally understand her. No, you don't, you daft dimble. You for sure, Don, she's way more complex than that. And so is he, by the way. And so is he. That's what marriage is, though. That's what it is today. I want you to live that out. I want you to be courageous in your marriage today. Today. It could only possibly happen. We talked about this last week, right? It could only possibly happen when you establish, first of all, that because of Jesus, I am loved. I am valuable. I am beautiful. And then knowing that, you can be courageous enough to say, here is me. If you're single, by the way, that's the goal. If you're dating somebody and you feel like you got to change to please them, that ain't good. Remember, I was dating this girl in high school. She made me so nervous. So nervous. And part of the reason was she was nervous to eat in front of me. And when I noticed how nervous she was to eat in front of me, it made me really nervous to eat in front of her. Has that ever happened to you? And then it becomes like this bandwagon of nervousness, like this domino of nervousness. And I'm just like, this is so nerve-wracking. Like just eating. I thought eating was simple. Evidently, it is not. And then one time, I worked at a full-serve gas station, and she came to visit me. And she was so nervous that when she drove away, she rammed her Monte Carlo into the side of the gas pump, and we just about had to evacuate the gas station. I was gonna say, so if you're dating somebody and you're nervous to eat in front of them, break up with them immediately. But that's dumb. That's overkill. Because you can have jitters and stuff like that. I would say this though. Here's what you're looking for. You're looking to be in a relationship with somebody. Or you can say, hey, here's me. And they cheer on and celebrate you becoming the truest version of you. However, if you find yourself with somebody who says, I like this part of you, but I don't care for this part of you. Like, I like your looks, but I don't like your personality. I like your sense of humor, but I don't like your dreams. Run. You say, Mike, how can I tell? It's easy to tell. You'll sense it. You'll sense that when you're around them, somehow you have to pretend to be someone you are not. That's not the plan, man. It's just not. So for me, that miracle is still playing out to this day. It started on a pier at White Rock overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And I remember the very next day we went on our second date, which I most definitely asked her on. We went to Cultus Lake and we went water skiing. My uncle Nick took us water skiing. And then when we were done, we helped him load up the boat and then we walked along the shore of Cultus Lake. And we talked a lot, you know. And eventually we got to this spot and it was just a tree was kind of like half knocked over. Okay, so there's this tree and it's overhanging the lake. And I say to Corinne, hey, let's go sit out on that tree and just like, just kind of like overlook the lake. It's gonna be awesome. She says, no. I said, what? She said, no, it's flimsy. It's gonna break. I said, you're crazy. I've never seen anything less flimsy in my entire life than that tree. I can't believe you would say that. So to prove my point, obviously, I went out onto the tree and I stood on the end of it and I started bouncing up and down, jumping on it, and then the tree broke, you know? And I fell in. And by that time I had changed. I was just, first service I was thinking, so I got soaking wet. What was I wearing? I was wearing fake leather boat shoes, sweatpants, and a jean jacket, obviously, right? No wonder she liked me so much, okay? But my point is I came up out of the water, survived, and I looked, and I could tell that she liked me more because I fell in the water, which was a big deal for me, and here's why. Because that's who I am. Like, I'm the ADHD kid growing up. I can't sit still. I leap before I look. I'm trying to get better. But do you understand, though? Is you want to find someone who looks at you and celebrates the you-ness of you. Because I don't know what I would have done if I would have come up out of the water sputtering and saw her feeling like, not cool, man. That miracle continued to play out in me, though, because like 15 minutes later, I looked at her and I said, you remind me so much of Grant King. And like, she already knew because I had talked to her a lot. Grant King was my best buddy growing up. Best buddy that anyone could ever have. And I know it's kind of a weird thing to say that to a girl, you remind, but she knew what I meant. And I guess what I want to say to you is we can talk a lot about sex. We'll continue next week talking more about it. But I guess for me, I wanted you to understand the gift, the miracle of a friendship. See, there's people in here, you're never going to get married, but you're going to have some profound friendships in your life. And it's so beautiful. And if you're here today, or you're watching online today, and you don't know about this whole Bible thing, you don't know about this whole Jesus thing, about this whole God thing, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for being here. It's amazing you're here. I'll give you this for free. The goal is that kind of friendship. That if you get married one day, that the goal would be a friendship like that. If you are married today, that the goal would be a friendship like that. Now, if you're here today and you have faith in Jesus, I guess for me, I would just take it even a step further. And I would recommend that you just trust him. That you would transition your faith into trust. See, because the Bible lays out this plan. And the plan kind of works like this. Step one, you meet Jesus. You put your faith in Jesus. And then eventually, step by step, moment by moment, you transition that faith to trust. And you follow him one next step at a time. And all of a sudden in your life, you start to understand. And I am loved. I am valuable. I am beautiful. I'm already there. I don't have to live my whole life chasing after that stuff. It's already true of me. That's step one. Step two is out of that foundation, have the courage in your friendships, in your life, to pick some people where you can say, here's me. And then one day, maybe, you'll meet someone. And there'll be a decision that you make at some point where you will say, I wanna pursue this friendship for the rest of my life. I wanna be faithful to you for the rest of my life. Well, that's a big deal. That's a big commitment. It's so big, in fact, that we have this thing called marriage. Marriage is inviting God, God, I'm gonna need your help. this whole lifelong commitment thing, I'm gonna need you to help me, right? Like just like you are a bound together child of God, when you get married, you invite and you ask God, God, would you please bind the two of us together? And then the next step is sex. You say, Mike, why that order? That's kind of harsh. Why would you do it in that order? Well, I'll talk a bit more about that next week, but you know why for me? You know why that order for me? Because I trust God. He's been good to me. And I think sometimes, honestly, I think as a church sometimes, we do kind of a bad job. We say stuff like this, oh, you got to get married if you want to have sex, you know what I mean? It's like a license to drive. It's like, you know, that's when all the good stuff starts. You got to get married and then you get to have sex. And it's just such a weird thing to say. Like a few months ago, I went down to Los Angeles for a conference with Leah and Brianna and Emma. And the last day that we were in LA, it was a Sunday. And I wanted to go to church. And they're not as good a Christian as me. And they wanted to go to Disneyland. See what I deal with? It's tough being me. There was three of them and one of me, so we went to Disneyland, okay? We went to Disneyland, $270 to get in per person. I'm like, well, I'm not paying for you guys. You pay for yourself if you want to go. And they're like, yeah, okay. And so we went. It was pretty fun. We did like Pirates of the Caribbean, the Star Wars rides, the Thunder Mountain something, Buzz Lightyear, and then this lame Peter Pan ride. Okay, but mostly it was fun. And then we're walking out because we got to get to the airport. And one of the girls is like, oh, before we leave, we should get some Dole Whip. And what Dole Whip is like kind of like pineapple ice cream. It's like $2. Okay? And so we did, and it was good. It was good. Okay. I think the problem with the church sometimes, and I hope I don't butcher this illustration, okay? I think the problem with the church sometimes is like we talk like, I paid $270, and I got some Dole Whip. Like that was the point. I think sometimes we treat marriage and the profound soul level friendship that is marriage as if, yeah, but here's the point. You get to have sex. No. I told you that the miracle that started on the pier at White Rock overlooking the Pacific Ocean still plays out to this day. Let me explain. One of the things that I talked about earlier, I said romanticism says that there's one, a right one out there for me that's gonna complete me. Well, I figured out a long time ago that there is a right one, and his name is Jesus. And I have a relationship with him, and he's completing me. And part of his plan for my life is this, that I would be spiritually alive, and that the spiritual aliveness inside of me would manifest itself in my day-to-day life. And get this, this is crazy. When Corinne and I made that decision on the pier at White Rock and said, here is it began something. And my relationship with Corinne, spiritual, physical, emotional relationship with Corinne, God has been using that. And through that relationship in part, I'm becoming the person I was created to be. And I know for sure he's not even close to done. That's the point. That's the beauty. So just two things before I close today. I know that this is a heavy topic, I do. And if last week was any indication, there's a lot of hurt around this whole topic of sexuality. And I wanna let you know that I consider it an honor to speak to you for whatever it is, 40 minutes once a week. I consider it a great honor. And to some degree, I hope you're getting to know me a little bit. There's a bit of a friendship, but at Southside, we know that you need more than just this. And so what I would say is, if you feel like there's brokenness around this area for you, whether it's around the concept of body image, whether it's looking back with regret at decisions that you made, whether it's stress that you're facing currently, whatever it might be, I know this, you're not meant to walk through it alone. I told you before, I'm going to remind you again, that what God has bound together should not be broken. And yet, the promise, Jesus stepped into human history to say this, and yet, what has been broken can be bound back together. That's the plan. That's the truth. So we want to be a part of that healing journey for you. If you need help in this area, anytime today or tomorrow or anytime, you obviously can text the word care to that number. And here's the point. It seems like, well, I'm going to text the number. Yeah, and then we're going to get a hold of you. And we're going to establish a friendship. And we're going to cheer you on. I know one thing for sure. The best is yet to come for you. Why don't you close your eyes and bow your heads? I said it earlier, I'll say it again. Step one. The beginning of healing, the beginning of I am loved, I am valuable, I am beautiful, the beginning of becoming fully, completely, and totally alive is Jesus. He came and he died so that you could have a fresh start, a new beginning. You could get past your past. Healing and forgiveness through the death of Jesus. He rose again, so that you could have strength for today and hope for tomorrow, that you could really live from this foundation of fully loved, fully valuable, fully beautiful, already. Everything that needed to be done for your salvation has already been done. Jesus did it. So the ball is now in your court. I just want to give you the opportunity, with all heads bowed and all eyes closed, to accept that gift that Jesus already purchased for you. And the way that I invite you to do that today is just right now in this moment, raise your hand, please, nice and high if that's you. If today is your day, I love it. I love it. It's beautiful. If today is your day, if you're watching online and it's safe to do so, I'd love it if you would raise your hand if today is your day. Okay, you can put your hands down if they're up. I'm going to pray out loud, and I just invite you to pray silently along with me. So Jesus, thank you. Thank you that you died for me. I accept the gift of a clean slate and a new start. I pray that today would be the beginning of healing. Today would be the beginning of alive, fully, completely, totally alive. Because not only did you die for me, you rose again for me. I put my faith in you, Jesus. And more than that, I give you my trust. Lead me one next step at a time. Today, tomorrow, and forever, I love you. In your name, amen. Amen. Let's celebrate. You guys didn't wake up at 4 a.m., but you're still cool. See you next week. I love you.
Thanks again for listening. To hear more messages like this one, make sure to subscribe and check out our podcast channel for past episodes. And to stay up to date with all things Southside, follow @Southside_Church on Instagram. We love you guys. The best is yet to come.